We're here in the Congressional Corner with my friend, Republican Chris Gibson of New York's 19th District. Chris, Donald Trump is campaigning all over New York ahead of the primary. And so what do you make of Trump? Do you want him to get the nomination? If he doesn't get the nomination, would that be a good or bad thing?
Well, a couple things. First of all, I have not supported any of the Republican candidates, nor the Democratic candidates, obviously. But let me say this. I mean, I understand what's going on out there. I think Donald Trump has taken advantage of some real strong emotions in the land, including in my district and across New York. If you think about it, let's review the bidding for about the last 8 or 9 years or so. The first is this crash in 2008. You know, I remember when I first retired from the Army in 2010, I was asked, would you have supported the bank bailouts? And I said, no. I thought that there were other ways that we could have held the depositors harmless. We had FDIC. We had other approaches. I was very concerned we were creating moral hazard in these boardrooms. And so, you know, there have been strong feelings about that since then, not just among the heartland, among Republican voters, but among a fair number of Bernie Sanders supporters as well.
I would say, yeah.
So big banks, second issue. I think many Americans, like myself, do support peace through strength. We do support a strong military as a deterrent to those who would want to do us harm. But many of us really think that we've overused the military. Reactions with regard to whether or not to invade Iraq in 2003 and subsequent to that, should we bomb Libya? You may know, I think you remember that I spoke in the well of the House against that. And then Syria, whether or not we should bomb. And so another major issue that Donald Trump is tapping into is big war. So you've got big banks, you've got big war, and, you know, my book, Securing the State, I take to task Donald Rumsfeld and the whole neoconservative approach to security. If you're having trouble sleeping, I recommend it. Other than that, sure, you probably want to, you know.
But it's a profound point.
No, it is. So that's two. Here's three.
By the way, let me just interrupt and say what you're talking about, again, redounds not only to Donald Trump and his verbiage, but also to Bernie Sanders. Both guys are out classic outsiders on those issues.
So that's two. Let's keep going. Number three is big testing and big education. I mean, look, I've said a number of times when I've sat with you that I think George W. Bush, I think he meant well. He had good intentions. His wife was a teacher. But No Child Left Behind really put us on a path towards centralizing education, homogenizing graduates, relying on unfunded mandates and onerous high-stakes testing. And there's been a real revolt to that. Look at this past week again with the opt-out movement. Big banks, big war, big testing slash big education, and then trade. You know, you look at, the impacts here across our state and across the land in terms of NAFTA, and then you consider the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And so what I'm suggesting to you is on big banks, big testing, big war, big trade, all of these things, the American people have felt left out. And I guess I would also say that my record is very clear. I've been on the right side of all those issues for my people. And then here's the last point, is leadership. And as much as I thought John Boehner was a good and honorable man, I could not vote for his reelect. So when people say to me, you know, Donald Trump is gaining in traction, I'm out in my districts all the time listening. I understand why they're moving to him. And not only do I understand, I actually agree with the sentiment of how upset they are. Having said all that, big banks, big war, big trade, big testing slash education, and the need for new leadership. With due respect to all those who agree with me on all those positions, and I don't think Donald Trump is the right guy to lead this movement. It's insincere. Look, he has been on the other side of these issues over time. And when I look at the seriousness that is needed as the executive, I just want to see more study in the gentleman. And, you know, the other point is I've got beefs with all three of them. And look, as a Republican, do I want our team to win in November? Of course I do. But at least as far as the primary, I don't plan to vote for any one of those three. And some people say, well, what about Kasich? Well, here's my issue with Kasich. And there are a few. First of all, he full-throatedly supported Common Core. He is an enthusiastic supporter of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. His rhetoric on foreign policy appears to me to be a neoconservative. So I've got major concerns with Kasich. And so, you know, at this point, I'm likely to write somebody in come next Tuesday.
What you got in mind?
Well, look, I'm looking at potentially the governor of Maryland. Larry Hogan's a guy that has beat cancer. He won in a deeply blue state, and he's trying really hard to turn that economy around. And I think that's something I can certainly sympathize with in terms of what's going on here in New York. So I'm looking at potentially Larry Hogan. I looked at Mary Phelan. So, you know, I'm looking at those. What I'm looking for is a leader, a Republican leader with executive experience, either a governor or a businessman or woman or a former commander, military commander. I'm looking for somebody who has a real pulse on what's going on and will bring true change, which is, you know, when you look at Trump and Sanders, that's where they're really gaining traction. Is there's a feeling that, and some of the big issues, you know, that the fix is in. Whether it be about big surveillance or big war or big banks, big education, big trade, they feel that the fix is in and they want a whole new leadership in Washington.
Now, you, of course, have decided to call it quits after three terms in the House of Representatives, bringing you lots of admiration as one of the few guys who ever made a pledge and then kept it. That is, of course, in some way a reaction to the very things you've been talking about.
Well, absolutely. Now, it's heartfelt and long held, a belief that we were never meant to have a permanent political class. We were something very special in the 18th century when we came forward with the government of the people, by the people, for the people. We were going to govern ourselves. We were going to be self-governing. What was implied in that is we would send people for a period of time, and then they would come back. You know, you look at the fact that the Articles of Confederation actually had rotation of office in it. And now when we moved to a constitution, we didn't move that along with it. But it's not because they gave up on that. It's just they very carefully chose a tightly worded and crafted constitution. Our first president felt so strongly about it that he self-imposed term limits. It lasted for over 150 years, just that norm. So, look, I want to lead by example on this. I did co-sponsor legislation to enact term limits for everyone in the Congress. You can imagine how unpopular that was. I think I was one of nine. But I'm not waiting on a change in the law. I'm going first, and I'm saying I'm going to self-impose it. I hope. In fact, one of the candidates in this race for the 19th has already self-imposed term limits, from what I understand. So I'm hoping that that will be a norm that you'll see throughout upstate New York.
Well, Chris Gibson, we love having you with us. You are a great friend. I very much appreciate it. And we'll be seeing you soon on another issue.
Thank you, Alan. Best wishes to all listeners out there.